This week at Breezy Breakfast, we are proud to offer a podcast highlighting Black culture in Guelph. Denise Francis and Quinn from the Guelph Black Heritage Society are our guests. While teaching us the history of people like James Kelso, the Jewell family, the Strickland, Quinn and Denise provide a vivid story of Black settlers and their significant roles in the history of Wellington County. Should Black history be highlighted just for 1 month? Do we need to broaden our horizons? Is Guelph a truly multicultural city? Let's listen to Quinn and Denise as they answer questions asked by the folks at Breezy Breakfast.
Good morning, Breezy Breakfast. Today is Thursday, July the 28th. Today, we are very graced to have with us Denise Francis and Quinn from the Guelph Black Heritage Society, and they will be discussing Emancipation Day with us today. And I welcome Denise and Quinn. Please let us know what it is we need to learn.
Good morning, and thank you for that introduction, Morgan. Some of you may know us, but I'm Denise Francis, and I'm the president and treasurer of the Guelph Black Heritage Society.
Hello, everyone, and thank you so much for having us this morning. Thank you, Morgan, for the introduction. My name is Queen, and I am the executive director at the Guelph Black Heritage Society. We are going to begin this morning with our unity address, and our unity address is something that came out of a place of wanting a territorial acknowledgement, but something that wasn't so manufactured, but really coming from a place of a connection between Black and Indigenous peoples. Indigenous and Black communities have shared a past of injustice, and they deserve a shared future of justice. The history of colonization is a story of controlled land, perceived resources, and the genocide to Indigenous peoples across this country. Black liberation and Indigenous reconciliation are heavily linked. For hundreds of years, there have been long-standing relationships between Black and Indigenous peoples. And these relationships between Black and Indigenous communities are growing stronger every day. In a country built on white supremacy and violence, it is important for us as a global majority to continue working together for solidarity for each other. The Guelph Black Heritage Society supports the Indigenous peoples of Turtle Island in their efforts to heal from any generational trauma, environmental racism, colonization, the undercovering of residential schools, and the constant loss of missing and murdered Indigenous women, queer, and trans. Today, Tadina Done, known by colonization as Guelph, is situated on the ancestral homelands of the Anishinaabeg peoples, Mohawk, and Haudenosaunee, specifically the traditional territory of the Mississaugas of the Credit First Nations. It is home to many First Nations, Inuit, and Métis people today. The Guelph Black Heritage Society stands in solidarity and community in the Truth and Reconciliation Commission's call to action. We must all do more to learn, share, and support in truth and healing. Now, we will start by telling you a little bit about our organization.
Thank you, Queen. The Guelph Black Heritage Society, or the GBHS as we call ourselves, was formed after the British Methodist Episcopal Church was listed for sale in November 2011. This historical stone church was built in 1880 by formerly enslaved Black individuals and their descendants who arrived in Canada via the famed Underground Railroad. This building has been renamed the Heritage Hall, and it is the only Black-owned and Black-focused cultural center in Wellington County. We host many events at the Heritage Hall each year, including cultural and educational programming, concerts, workshops, dramatic presentations, while also providing meeting space for community groups. Our mandate is to preserve the Heritage Hall as a cultural heritage building, representing the historical present and continued influence of the Black community on the quality of life in Guelph, Wellington County, and across the country. We raise awareness in Guelph of both local and national Black heritage, as well as addressing social issues of importance to Black Canadian communities.
Thank you, Denise. On June 6th of 2020, I was the lead organizer in planning a peaceful march and protest to raise awareness for the lives lost in violence and to show solidarity for the families and communities most impacted. This historic event attracted over 8,000 people. The protest on June 6th was just a starting place for the amount of work that just needed to be done in change of policy and to create opportunities for Black voices to be heard. In that watershed moment that will forever change the course of Black history, the GBHS launched our Change Starts Now initiative. Our Change Starts Now educational initiative provides educational programming on Black history and culture, as well as relevant sources on diversity, discrimination, and anti-racism.
So we're going to start off by telling you a little bit about what is Emancipation Day in Canada. Emancipation Day is actually celebrated throughout the other parts of the world as well too, in the Caribbean, for example. But in Guelph and in Canada, the Guelph Black Heritage Society hosts an annual Emancipation Day celebration. And this will be our 10th year that we are hosting a celebration at the Heritage Hall. This year, we will be hosting our Emancipation Day Freeing Our Ancestors event, and we welcome everybody to attend. It will be Monday, August 1st at 3 p.m. at the Heritage Hall at 83 Essex Street. Emancipation Day is celebrated in Canada to commemorate the emancipation of enslaved people of African descent, and it celebrates the strength and perseverance of the Black communities in Canada. On March 24th, 2021, the House of Commons voted unanimously to designate August 1st Emancipation Day. August 1st marks the actual day in 1834 that the Slavery Abolition Act of 1833 came into effect across the British Empire. Canadians are not always aware that Black and Indigenous peoples were once enslaved on the land that is now known as Canada, Turtle Island. Those who fought enslavement were pivotal in shaping our society to be as diverse as it is today. Each August 1st, Canadians are invited to reflect, educate, and engage in the ongoing fight against anti-Black racism and discrimination.
During our Emancipation Day event, we'll be raising the Pan-African flag. The Pan-African flag is closely associated with Marcus Garvey and the Black Liberation Movement. Marcus Messiah Garvey Sr., born August 17th of 1887 and passed June 10th of 1940, was a Jamaican political activist, publisher, journalist, entrepreneur, and he was a founder and first president general of the Universal Negro Improvement Association and the African Communities League, commonly known as the UNIA. The flag was created in 1920 by members of the UNIA in response to the Coon Song, a late 19th century craze song that belittled and mocked African Americans and imitated a stereotyped speech. Marcus Garvey has been quoted saying, "Show me the race or the nation without a flag, and I will show you the race of a peoples without any pride." The colors of the flag indicate red, black, and green. Red is the color of the blood which men must shed for their redemption and liberty. Black is the color of the noble and distinguished race to which we belong. Green is the color of the vegetation of our motherland, Africa. The flag later became a Black nationalist symbol for the worldwide liberation of Black people. As an emblem of Black pride, the flag became popular during Black liberation movement of the 1960s.
As I mentioned earlier, we'll be hosting our 10th annual Emancipation celebration this year on August 1st at 3 p.m. We do have a suggested donation of $10 per person. Some of the activities that you will see are, we will be raising the Pan-African flag, which Queen just described. We'll have DJ Jinx playing some music. There's the opportunity to learn traditional and modern African dance movements with Afro-Tribal. Natalie Ann Brown will do a spoken word performance. You can also learn some Caribbean dance movements and soca with the Korean Company. We'll be having our Freeing Our Ancestors ceremony and blessing. And we'll also have some Caribbean food provided by Big Jerk Smokehouse and the catering group, and beverages from Laza Food and Beverage. Proceeds from our Emancipated Day celebration will go towards our Give a Cup Capital campaign. And the mission of this campaign is freedom. Free us from our mortgage so that we will be able to allocate additional resources towards our ongoing Change Starts Now education initiative.
While Emancipation Day is a time of celebration, it is also a time to reflect. We'll be placing crosses with the names of our BIPOC, so our Black, Indigenous, people of color communities who have lost their lives due to violence. We will be honoring those BIPOC Canadians who have lost their lives since 2020 leading up to today. We will be freeing our ancestors to acknowledge the trauma and reflect on the devastations of our ancestors and our communities that we continue to face and endure. The GBHS has received donations of a variety of items which are racist in nature, including minstrel and blackface items. The codifying of blackness and blackface minstrelly throughout specific makeup, language, and movement created a legacy of racial stereotypes. Blackface is an assertion of power and control, and it has allowed society to routinely and historically imagine Black individuals as not fully human. Blackface minstrel shows were once a commonplace in Guelph. Believe it or not, we have a photo. So we will be freeing those ancestors as part of this day. It will be a really great opportunity if you have any racist items at home or any friends that you know that need those items taken. We will welcome them at this event to free our ancestors and really heal the process. To continue learning about Blackface or more resources about things like this, you can be found at blackpastinguelph.com, which we will also place in the chat here.
The theme for our programming in 2020 is our stories, our history, our heritage. There is an absence and erasure of Black history in Guelph, Wellington County, and throughout the land that we live in. The erasure of Black history in Guelph and Wellington County is truly sad and distressing. Many of the settlements, churches, and homesteads no longer exist, and all we see are fields of corn. At the GBHS, we will continue to share these stories as it is our mission to remember the forgotten and amplify their voices. We are doing our part to change this narrative and create resources for the community.
So amongst all the wonderful work that is being done at the GBHS, we have some initiatives that you may have not heard of yet and some ongoing projects. One is our historical video series. So this is a 5 short videos which highlight stories of Black Canadians who lived in southwestern Ontario. Anna Maria Weems, Melissa Smith Lawson, Henry Dangerfield Lawson, The Little Family, and Bud Fowler. Some of these historical videos have been released and can be found on our page with our YouTube page through the Guelph Black Heritage Society. In addition, we have also had a booklet come out called The Change Starts Now, Our Stories, Our History, Our Heritage. This was written by Natasha Henry, who is the president of the Ontario Black History Society and a York University faculty member. This booklet is about the history of Guelph, the British Methodist Episcopal Church, and the stories of the people who helped build this community. In addition, you can now come out as the rest of August and hopefully leading into the fall, but we'll have more information on that soon, is our Heritage Hall tours. We have opened the space up. This does come with a bit of a fee that of course goes towards the maintenance and mortgage of the Heritage Hall in our Give a Cup and Change Starts Now initiatives. our Heritage Halls tours. You can come out, take a tour, and learn about the beautiful history of the building, both inside and outside. And lastly, we have what's called our Wellington County Black Heritage Reclaimed Driving Map. It has been a really long process and a really enduring process to see, and there's still a lot of pieces to put together. But this driving map is, I would say, Denise, a passion project of yours and a vision of yours that really came from an idea of wanting to see this education spread further than Guelph and connecting us all to the wonderful heritage of the Wellington County area. So we can encourage you to continue to connect, learn, and grow, and explore the stories of the Black community in our area. We thank each of you for listening to us today, and hopefully there'll be some questions that we can kind of dig deep in on this morning. But we appreciate you taking time learning about Emancipation Day, about what's happening at the GBHS, and of course, all the initiatives that have been going on. Thank you, Denise. Thank you, everyone here, and thank you so much.
Denise, Queen, thank you for that very brief look into what Emancipation Day is all about. I am sure there is much more involved in everything than what you're able to share with us today, but let's delve into things a little bit. One of the questions that I've heard some of my white friends say, well, what's the difference between Juneteenth and Emancipation Day? Why are there two? Why are they so close together? And I don't have an answer for them. Can you help me
be able to answer? There is a basic answer to that, Morgan, because we are in Canada. Juneteenth is an American celebration as to the end of enslavement in the States. Emancipation Day celebrates the end of enslavement in the British Empire, with Canada across the Caribbean. That's why we celebrate on August 1st. And Juneteenth only became a thing fairly recently. I'm sure if you ask people 5 years ago, they would have no clue what Juneteenth is or why we celebrate. So the biggest difference is one is the American celebration and the other August 1st is what we celebrate and across the former British Empire and our colonialization across the Caribbean as well too.
Thank you so much for that. It's going to be so much easier for me now to answer with honesty and a little teeny tiny bit of knowledge. One of the other questions that I've heard here and there has to do with, so they've got the Black History Month. Why do they need an Emancipation Day? And again, these are questions that I hear. These are not my questions. I'm hoping to help educate those individuals that have these kinds of questions that I do hear. And I know you guys are such amazing educators that I can come to you with these questions and you understand that when I'm asking them, it is coming from a place of desiring to be able to help educate others as well.
I will start off and then Queen can join in as needed. We do appreciate the opportunity to come to presentations like this because part of our mandate is to educate and to share. And as we say, connect and learn and grow. And without people having the courage and the opportunity to ask questions, we cannot make any changes in our community. So we welcome all questions. In terms of, I'll be honest with you, I'm actually not a fan of Black Heritage Month. I do not understand why we should be restricted in learning about Black history and culture and heritage through 28 days or on a leap year, 29 days. It's really something that part of our mandate is that we should be celebrating our culture throughout the year. And so that's one of my personal beliefs is that sure, we do have Black Heritage Month, but it's not something that, as a Black-led organization, and Queen can attest to this, we are inundated with requests, in terms of speaking engagements, other sort of activities. And from a more basic standpoint too, it's often when many Black-led organizations do the majority of their fundraising, because it's like Black money-making month as opposed to Black Heritage Month. And you're exhausted and you're tired, and you can't even enjoy what we should be celebrating because we have no time to celebrate with other members of our community who are doing some great work as well too. So Queen, did you want to answer the part about, you know, we have Black History Month or Black Heritage Month, and why are we also celebrating in August 1st?
Yeah, thank you, Denise. And that's such a great way to put it. I think we are putting out a new initiative for February, Black Vacation Week, which is encouraging all Black community members to take a week off, because so rarely, as you said, Denise, and I'll echo that, is we don't get the time to celebrate each other. There's a beautiful event happening for the London Fugitive Slave Chapel on Emancipation Day, and we can't be there to support because we have to host our event, which is great. But, you know, these days are important because, as we spoke about, they commemorate certain specific days. Juneteenth, the Emancipation of the United States, Emancipation Day here in Canada, which is now federally recognized, which, you know, I also go to say who gets that day off as well, whether it is federally recognized or not. But it's important to have these days to honor it. And just like Denise had said, I am the same way for Black Heritage Month. It should be celebrated all year long. If we're asking why Juneteenth, I say why Valentine's Day? You know, it is important that we have these moments. We don't even get moments to breathe as it is. So those extra time set aside to also honor, educate folks on what those days mean and the importance of those days, having those celebrations. A lot of these days come from places of emancipation, resilience, strength, like a power that comes from the Black community of coming out of enslavement. And that needs to also be recognized, encouraged, and celebrated as well, despite all the horrific stories that come alongside that. So whether it's one day, whether it's a month, it should be all year long with no complaints.
And same with learning about Indigenous history. It's learning about the histories that have been hidden from the majority of people due to the white narrative.
Yeah.
One of the things that Queen mentioned about initiatives that really caught my ear was this driving map around Wellington County. Can you explain how that came about and how we can join in?
Yeah, go ahead, Denise.
Okay, you can interrupt me if I'm and chime in too. So the GBHS has been around for 10 years, but both Queen and I grew up in Guelph. And I will say that I didn't even know about the BME Church until I was a student at the University of Guelph in the 90s. When I happened to meet the former pastor of the church. And that just sort of struck me that we have this history in our town. The Black community has been around since the early 1800s, but nobody knows it. When you drive, and that sort of piqued my interest in history and local Black history. As my parents were immigrants, and I didn't realize that, because we were never taught it in school, that the Black community has been around for so long. I just assumed, especially when I was little, that all Black people came from someplace like my family did. And so it is important that we learn that there are generations of Black families who have been around for 8, 9, 10 generations. And we need to explore this history. So the driving map came about. It's something I had, I'm always talking about it, how I have all these visions. And I had a vision about a decade ago as to, if I don't know about this church, what else is there in Wellington County that exists? And it is very hard to find any sort of information about the Black community in Guelph and Wellington County. You know, you can go to the Wellington County Museum and Archives, you can go to our Guelph Civic Museum at the Hilltop, and there's very little resources. So we started a partnership with the University of Guelph, and we work quite closely with their CESI department, the Community Engaged Scholarship Institute. And I proposed this project many years ago, and the students there have been great in doing some research and in covering some of these locations of churches, homesteads, and settlements that existed. Last year, Queen and I started a journey, and we've been exploring some of these places. And not just in Guelph and Wellington County, it's taken us to St. Catharines, Owen Sound, and other places throughout southwestern Ontario. And what's troubling to us is that we've gotten the locations, we have our GPS, and you drive out there, And now you see our fields of corn. These, the homesteads, the settlements, the churches, most of them do not exist. So that is such a powerful statement, and the fact that there that we have a physical and a tangible way to say that these places, we know they exist through the history, through the research from credible sources. But when you go there, there's nothing. So it was a powerful thing to go and look. And we were driving and driving, and there was nothing there. And that statement to us just meant so much. And we have to show people that we have been here for hundreds of years, but it's almost like we have been erased. We have been erased. So that came about for our desire to mark off these places on a map and to show where we used to be all over the county. And like I said, it's a project we worked on with Ceci, this grad student named Renke Rudy. And she did a lot of the research for us. And the map that we have coming out, and we can put a link to it in the chat there. To purchase it, is that it only highlights 10 places, but we are working on, you know, expanding the map, because we provide a little history about why these places are significant to our community. And so that's how that project came about. Anything else, Clint?
Yeah, that was beautiful. And I'm so excited to see this driving map, because as Denise mentioned, when you see these places, it is really distressing. And it's so sad to see that GBHS has really just been so lucky that our place is still in existence. And that spreads along many other locations that don't have the resources and don't have a Denise necessarily behind their team to keep their businesses going. And, you know, for me, one that really hit home is, you know, a few weeks ago, I really just got myself educated on the Norfolk Medical Center downtown, that brick and mortar downtown, right across the street from Market Fresh. That used to be the home of the Jewell family, a Black family here in Guelph. And that really hit home for me, because that is just such a replacement of what colonization can look like. And when we talk about August 1st, I think it's important when we look at these things and we look at the reasons we have the driving map is we're trying to ensure proper education. As of today, we still have John Galt Day on August 1st as well. And we still have Emancipation Day sitting on that same day. That to me makes zero sense in my head, because if you're looking for change, we would be having conversations about a colonizer who really took over cities, you know, it made Guelph what it is today. Colonization worked here, and that spread outside, looking at London, looking at Toronto. And we see that impact of Indigenous Black communities, and we see that through the driving map. You see the ways that homesteads are gone, land is gone. There's even you know, a location like Pierpoint Park, which you may have heard us talk about, which is really inaccessible. The trail itself is just a disaster. And these things are not upkept, even though they are recognized in some way. So even places that have recognitions or plaques sitting there also have no respect or no love and passion for the people that were on that land, the people that took their blood, sweat, tears, their heart into that land. So this driving map will open up eyes, I hope, for folks to see and educate themselves on the fact that we were here long before the Italian community, and that predates outside of, you know, not just Guelph, but in the Wellington County.
Thank you so much. And now you mentioned about Pierpoint Park. There are two, are there not? One in Fergus and one in St. Catharines?
Yes, there are. So when you look at the history of Richard Pierpoint, one of his initial settlements was in St. Catharines, and they've recently had a plaque unveiling ceremony there. I believe it was either in May or June. And after the War of 1812, and he was giving, you know, the Black Corps, and he was given a land grant in what is known as Garifax at the time, which is present day Fergus. He'd actually asked for his passage back to Africa as a senior citizen to go back to his homeland, but that was denied. And instead he was granted this land grant in Fergus. And so that is the Pierpoint Park that Queen is referring to, which is just down the street from John Black School. So when he did first came over from Bondou, which is now present day Senegal, he came over to an area which was near St. Catharines.
Thank you for helping me understand the difference between the two parks. One of the things that I do recall hearing as well is that the Pierpoint Park up in Fergus is potentially in some jeopardy due to a road expansion that want to absolutely decimate the entire park to create a traffic route. And Queen, I know you got something to say about that.
I have so many things to say about that. But what I will say is it definitely is really important for people to engage. The more people that there are a few different groups working towards saving the park. There are folks that are like heavily being advertised right now. And those are the folks that are wanting to save the park for fly fishing purposes, which is cute and really like white and colonial. But there's also like a Black man's land who is also really important, and not just his land, but the land of actually many of our ancestors who resided there. This traffic stop, which is really unfortunate, is Denise and I did have the opportunity to speak to the mayor and some of the city councilors on this, and our motion was denied, which was probably one of the most disappointing days of 2022 or 2021 for me, was hearing that, because, you know, not just Denise, but several other folks who are, you know, working towards this, is they really put on some good presentations, and it doesn't make sense that the motion was denied, but it really shows, you know, money and resources is more important than land and people. And so there's definitely probably some reclamation that will need to be done there. It does seem like that traffic stop situation looks like a 10-year project. So we still have a lot of time for other folks, allies, group members, to get together and really work hard to make sure that Richard Pierpoint, another gentleman, Lemoy Brown, their land is kept safe. It's not even that much, which is so sad too. So we really hope that you can take some time to look into that and educate yourself.
Thank you so much, Queen. And one of the things that I've seen recently happening here in Guelph, and Queen, I'd really love for you to slowly say the traditional name of the territory, because I do want to learn how to say it properly.
Yeah, it's ta.
Ta.
D.
Na.
Do.
Do.
Ne.
Tadidindone.
Tadinadone.
Tadinadone. So now we all know the traditional name of Guelph is?
Tadinadone.
Tadinadone. One of the things that's been happening most recently with our parks and trails is dedicating them to Black families. How has the city reached out, or has the city reached out to Guelph Black Heritage Society in helping to determine what families need to be honored?
It feels like so long ago we were having this conversation about one of the parks and naming after some of our war members, which, you know, I'm all about respecting these family names. I think it's beautiful. We have the Flora Francis Memorial Library inside the Guelph Black Heritage Society. Our BIPOC business directory is named after Viola Desmond, who is a Black woman that you have seen on our $10 banknote, but of course is known for being an entrepreneur and many other things. But might I add that when we look at this in a colonization point of view, we have to also ensure that we're making the actionable plans to keep the Black community that is alive safe too. Because we can name a park this and that, but are we actually doing the equity, diversity, and inclusion work to make sure we're having these conversations and we're keeping safety and we're looking at policing and government? But we did start a conversation. I think that was
It was over a year ago when there was a proposal to name a new park on the south end, Courtney, Goins, and Malott Park, after three of the members of the Black community who served in the number 2 construction battalion in the First World War. And, you know, after those initial conversations, I'm not really sure where that went. You know, we were consulted initially, and while I think it's great that they want to acknowledge these members of our community, I'm not really sure how the connection of that particular park had anything to do with the families, the lands, or anything in particular. Or is it just they decided that here's a new piece of property and we should talk about folks in the wake of 2020 and the, you know, and the increased awareness of the social justice movement with the Black community? I'm not really sure where that ended up or why they decided at that time after, you know, almost 100 years after they served in the war, why it was important at that point and not before to honor these great men who so valiantly served our country. So,
yeah, that is such a good point, Denise. And it makes me interested that you asked that question, because now I'm wondering if they're having conversations about this that we are not aware of.
No, honestly, it's just one of the things that popped into my head as we were talking about parks. I remembered that there was the discussion and different names were put forward, that there was a lot of sort of pomp and circumstance about it in the local publications. And I was just curious to know whether, you know, the Black Heritage Society of the city was involved in that. So it's good to know that in the beginning, at least, you were consulted. And so I'm wondering if there are any questions that any of our attendees have right now. There was one that came through. And just what did happen to the churches and homes? Do we know?
Isn't that the great question? That is the great question. I mean, we can visualize and understand what happened to the homesteads. And one of Denise's big questions of, I feel like it's like your biggest question of all is like, where did the Black community go? And when we look at, you know, how many of the Black and Indigenous community were here, even, you know, leading up into the early 1900s, that started to shift. And so we know by history standards what likely happened based on colonization, the removal of Black and Indigenous peoples, starting to push them out into the Fergus and Elora areas, which eventually pushed us out, you know, to what we know as like the Toronto areas, or back, maybe back to our homesteads of the Caribbean or African communities. There's a lot more research that needs to be done for that. And quite frankly, unfortunately, there's also a lot of research that's no longer there or existing, because, you know, there is a lot of, you know, burning of files. There is a lot of this stuff of our history over these years, burning of churches down to make sure that those histories are no longer anywhere in witness. So a lot of the work that we're doing, whether that be with the University of Guelph, whether that be through the museums and some of their archives, whether that be through communities reaching out and saying, hey, we actually found this in our attic the other day of this old history lineage, we're really just trying to piece together that question. Denise, would you like to add on there?
Yeah, that is one of the other questions I had aside from my driving map is, we sort of have an inclination as to why they left, but we want to know where did they go. And that also leads into one of the new projects that we forgot to mention, Queen, was about our new so-called digital archive project, because we have been receiving some, aside from the sort of minstrel and blackface items, we have been receiving some other items from families who have a great connection to Guelph about their genealogy and historical information. And so it's our goal to scan these documents, post on our website, so that people can learn more about the local history of the people who built this community. And that's education and history and sharing our culture. Those are passions that Queen and I both share. And so it's important to us that when we get these resources, that they are not just within the GBHS, that we are able to post them online or have people come and visit us so that they can come and learn a little bit more about our community as well, too.
Thank you so much. And I have to say, it is an incredible resource. We here at Breezy Breakfast decided to honor the Guelph Black Heritage Society during February and use your resources to educate ourselves instead of calling on you to do so. And that was when we decided, you know what, Emancipation Day needs more focus. And one of the ways to bring that focus is to have it be our community conversation just before Emancipation Day. There is a question in the chat from John Fisher. John is one of our regular attendees and part of the Guelph Hiking Trail Club. John would like to know, are you in contact with other Black Heritage societies, such as Buxton National Historic Site and Museum, which also has signed Underground Freedom Driving Trail linking different historical sites?
You want to answer that, Queen? Or?
So I guess to make sure that, like, we are a separate entity, so I will say that. I think a lot of the time people think there's like the Guelph Black Heritage and like the Fergus Black Heritage and the Toronto Black Heritage, but they are separate entities and settlements. Guelph Black Heritage being one of the only run by Black owned and Black run settlements as well, which is also pretty distressing. But nevertheless, we have relationships is maybe a better word with several of these locations, whether that be Buxton, Amherstburg, whether we're looking at the Salem Chapel up in Niagara, a beautiful relationship with them. Uncle Tom's Tavern, which I believe is up for name change, I believe coming this week or so.
Yes.
Yeah. So several of those kind of churches, homesteads, or things that are settlements that are still existing, whether we're not the same entity, we do have relationships with them. They will, you know, have been contacted or in contact when it comes to our driving map and our future endeavors for other historical things. But we're really trying to make these things like Black owned, Black designed, and Black created when we're telling our stories, especially since so many of these other settlements are run by our white settlers or allies in the community. Denise?
That was actually the point I was going to make. What makes the GBHS so unique is that we're Black owned and Black run. Many of the other facilities that we appreciate their passion and their desire to share our history and our stories, but they're not Black owned. And again, we ask how did they come out of the possession of the Black community? And we don't have enough time to talk about that this morning. We'll have like a 4 or 5 hour, or maybe a 3 day show. But that's really what's troubling. And then some of them also too are not even privately owned. Things like Uncle Tom's Cabin, that's government owned. And a few of the other sites as well are not in private hands. And so that's something that I think that makes us unique. But as Queen mentioned, we do have an alliance, or, you know, we do communicate with each other, because it is important that people see that these stories are not just isolated to one region in Ontario, but really all across the province. When you look at the trail that our ancestors, you know, walked, coming across from the Detroit River to the Ohio River, Niagara, and it's all across the province. And so we need to continue to share these stories and connect with each other. One of the questions I'm just going to answer is that about James Kelso, who is one of our community members who passed away, I think it's about 10 years ago now. And James has a very interesting story. He was, studied at McGill, had his master's in music, an amazing saxophone player. But then James also had a tragic story too, because his wife and children were killed on a way to visit him doing a performance. And after that, he had a life where he was addicted, had addiction issues, alcoholism for many years. And then after that, he found the strength to persevere, and he settled in Guelph. So many people used to remember him. You'd see him around, whether it be the church over on Whitelaw Road, downtown Guelph. I always used to see him at Price Chopper over on Speedville before. I'm not sure what they call it now. I think it's Freshco. But James is really a character around Guelph. And it was so interesting to talk to him, because he used to go to the BME church. And, you know, now what we call Bullfrog Mall, over across from John F. Ross High School, that's something else we need to add to the map, Queen. That used to be the Kelso family farm. And he would tell me stories about that. And he said, yeah, it used to be kind of like swampland, and there actually were bullfrogs, because I actually never knew why they called it Bullfrog Mall. And so they used to, he would tell me stories about how we'd walk from over there downtown to Essex Street, to the church. And so at the church, the former BME church, it wasn't just a church for the Black community. That was the heart of our Black community. They had a Sunday school. It was a safe haven. And it really was the sort of social center for our community. So from the Joel family to the Lawsons to the Sticklins, they all spent many time and a lot of time in that building because it truly was part of their community. A friend of mine, Adrian, his grandparents were married at the BME church. And so I find that so fascinating. And when I talked to Adrian and he was telling me about his grandparents being married there and they had a few pictures, one of his uncles had a plane. And I think on Ontario Street, and I've seen one picture from the museum of this plane. And so we have so many interesting stories, but sometimes the community members don't realize the history that they had. One of our past board members, I'm not sure if you've heard of the incident that happened at Sir George Williams University, part of Concordia now, the incident on the ninth floor. He was actually there. And we had a film screening with the Guelph Film Festival several years ago. And when I saw some of the stuff, his handwriting hasn't changed. And so they showed some of the documents that the students had presented to the faculty of what is now Concordia. And I saw his handwriting and I knew immediately that he had written that. So we have so many history makers in our community that are not acknowledged and recognized. So we need to do more to amplify these stories. So I know I got a bit off track there, but sorry about that.
Not off track at all. It's all about education and helping us understand that there is a very rich history of Black community within this area and throughout all of Southern Ontario. One of the things that just clicked with me years ago, back in the 90s, I had the great joy of participating in the Kadoomint Day Parade in Barbados on August the 1st. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to talk just a little bit about what's going on this weekend and why it's so important.
Yay, it's Carabana weekend. I'm so excited. It's also Emancipation Day weekend, which is why Carabana and Carnival falls on this weekend in Canada and in Toronto. If you are going to Toronto for just fun this weekend, I highly suggest to not do it. It's Carabana, OVO Fest, and Veld. So it's going to be a nightmare of a city. But if you can get out, Carabana is such a beautiful, or what we know as Toronto Carnival now by Scotiabank, is a beautiful, wonderful opportunity to celebrate and enjoy what we have as the Grand Parade that happens on Saturday, July 30th. At Lakeshore, and that happens, it starts at 9 a.m. in the morning and it goes to about 6 p.m., hopefully not any later in the afternoon. And what happens is there's this beautiful parade of what we call masqueraders, which are people dressed up in costumes. I don't think I have any around right now. And they dress up in costumes, which represents their country, the island they're from, a theme, a story. It can be telling all sorts of different things with these pieces. Many people see these beautiful costume pieces and just think it's sexy whining, but there is history to every move that we have, whether that's a hip whine or whether that's the beautiful costumes that we wear to tell the stories of our people. And Carnival really came from a space of emancipation. We have several pieces. It's not just Toronto Carnival. Carnival kicks off every year in Trinidad and Tobago, homeland of the soca music, and that starts in February, and then it happens all throughout the year on all sorts of different islands. Morgan got the experience of Cropover, which I would love to experience one day. Jamaica even has its own carnival now, which actually took longer than most people might expect because they are a dance hall and reggae island more so than a soca. We have Regina, Saskatchewan having their first ever Carib Fest this year. New Brunswick is on their second year of a Carabana Carnival. So it is really expanding. We see Nottingham Carnival is one of the biggest carnivals across the world in the UK. So it does spread. And let me be really clear, there is a difference between carnival and carnival. Carnival is this wonderful island experience of wonderful costumes. Carnival is more of your Brazilian type samba dance. I've seen it several times mixed up in the universe where they advertise Caribbean parties and it has samba dancers on there. They're different things. They come from different heritages and different cultures, both very beautiful. So this weekend is a long weekend of celebrations. It starts with a Friday night celebration of a Kings and Queens tournament where people present massive costumes. I mean, like room-sized costumes, and present them. There is a beautiful documentary that you can go that I believe is released now because it's July 22nd. Past then is Becoming a Queen documentary that talks a lot about the history of the Kings and Queens competitions. There is a junior carnival, which is just for our little kiddos to dance down the road, which is always super cute to watch. And then there's also what's called Juve, which has really come from a place of definitely emancipation. It's like a lot of war paint, a lot of rugged mud in the ground, a little bit like a Tough Mudder, and a lot of fun as well. So there's several different pieces that incorporate carnival. It's not just Caribana Weekend in Toronto. It is several things throughout the year, all year long. It is costumes, it is pride, it is emancipation, it is joy. It's good food, good music, and dance, which we always say at the GBHS is kind of those cores of our community. So if you have the opportunity to even follow up on pictures of Carnival after this weekend, please do. Those moments are so rare for our community, especially since 2020, to just be able to spread joy without the resilience of everything else that comes with it. We just get to be and celebrate. So that is this weekend. And then that follows is coming up as Emancipation Day on Monday, where we really commemorate everything that we've talked about coming out of enslavement and that power and endurance of our Black community.
Well, I did want to follow up on that answer about the North Buxton relationship. I just got a feeling that but maybe I misunderstood. But they have certainly, and I wanted to understand this. So although it is a National Historic Site, it is run also by volunteers who are all Black volunteers, as far as I know, but it's that community, the North Buxton community. And Chatham-Kent, has really capitalized on that whole site and the Freedom Trail to enhance tourism and everything else for that area. Now you did just mention Caribana, but I kind of got the feeling that you were objecting in some way to leveraging Black heritage for tourism and stuff like that. You know what I mean? Is that what I was getting? Because
that's actually not the case, because one of the big things that we have been talking about in terms of even tourism with some of the officials from the city of Guelph is to increase our what I would like to call cultural tourism.
Yeah.
And that people can come explore Wellington County and stay for a night or two, because there's so much in our region that people can learn. And so I wouldn't say that we're objecting. One of the things we're just stating, it's a statement of fact, is that what makes us unique is that we're Black owned and Black run. And when we talk about the whole notion of colonialism, why are these things no longer controlled by the Black community? That's just a statement. That's not to say that it's a bad thing. It's just we'd rather that these places still exist. But at the same time, there's something to be said about reclaiming what should be belonging and should be in the hands of the Black community. Anything to add to that, Queen?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, sometimes too, when we look at these locations, there are a lot of Black Afro-Caribbean volunteers. But when you look actually at the leads of these organizations as well, that is where a lot of our white settlers or allies do sit. But it's not, again, to say don't go to those settlements at all. Definitely part of the driving map tour, definitely have relationships with these locations. But we do like to highlight the immense power and courage and time and commitment it took from the Black community in this area to have ownership of that building. And might I add, we're still paying for a building that we built. So, you know, I think in that case, we just like to recognize that that owner and operation and stewardship of the building is still in Black hands.
And John, I'd like to say thank you for getting that clarification. I know that I feel that we're actually blessed here in Guelph to have the unique opportunity to have an organization that is led and owned by the Black community in the area where the Black community was most predominantly seen. And it is the church that they used. So there are relationships that are with the other organizations that are identified as Black Heritage Societies. And Guelph Black Heritage Society is unique amongst them in that they are the only Black-owned, Black-led. So in asking your question, we're able to highlight one more unique feature about Guelph and why it is that important for us to understand that this history is not white history. And those of us that are allies and, dare I say, some accomplices, we do need to take that step back and allow people that are directly involved to lead. So thank you again for getting that clarification, John. I think was really important that we do have the understanding there's no animosity amongst the Black Heritage Societies. It's just highlighting Guelph Black Heritage Society being unique and a leader, obviously, because they are Black owned and Black led.
Definitely come out for a tour at the Guelph Black Heritage Society. There's just some wonderful things to be seen. The Flora Francis Library of Black Literature is such a beautiful aspect of the Guelph Black Heritage Society. It is downstairs in our newly renovated space as well. So for many, I mean, it's been a long pandemic, and so many haven't been able to see the beautiful changes that have happened at the GBHS. So taking an opportunity to celebrate in that, taking a look at the library, there's a wonderful, amazing Canadian Black authors and Indigenous authors, as well as many outstanding worldwide as well. But we also have an inclusive library space of wonderful Canadian artists. And I think that's also really great for us to connect to the ones that we have here. For me, I think, you know, these past 2 years in light of George Floyd and everything that happened during 2020, we made about 7 calls to action. And I think about half of one has been done. And so for me, that reminds me that there's still a lot of work in this city that needs to be done. Taking an opportunity to look back at some of those calls to action on how we can invest in our resources better, how we can look at more secure social services, housing, food insecurity. The GBHS itself had to deal with some vandalism over the last few months. This is not new as well, but came up again as things started to open up, and that's been really challenging for us. So we need to know that we have a community of safety, a network of neighbors who are willing to support us in several ways, whether that be donating or whether that be, you know, just communicating, coming out to our events, also just checking in on us. There have been some really heavy times, and so often we're asked so much, but not just asked, like, how you doing during these times and through everything. So if you have some time to volunteer, please come out and volunteer. Or if you have a kid or a grandkid that you want to send out to volunteer, we are open to that as well, please. And just encourage you to continue that learning and growing, because it is obvious through the several things that we've talked about, we have so many different initiatives, youth initiatives, driving map, Change Starts Now booklet tour. Like, all these resources were things that weren't existing before. So in the last 2 years, we have worked diligently to create these, which means that it can be done extensively into our medical system, our educational system, and the list goes on, because the resources are there. The the funding isn't always there. So if you have ways, counselors, I'm talking to you to help support funding, we're always there to help that. But I just encourage everyone to just continue educating. We have had a lot of lost Black lives since 2020, a lot of Indigenous lives lost, especially to police violence with what's happening in Ferry Creek out west at Wet'suwet'en, what's happening at the lands in 1492 at Caledonia, what's happening at Laurel Creek in Kitchener, the land back there, what's happening to tent cities. Like, these things are really, really important that we encourage the conversation for the importance of marginalized communities. Denise?
There is one spot where I disagree with you, because you said there is maybe half of one of the call to actions that have been put into place. I disagree, because I don't think there's anything that's been put into place, but we still need to continue on. One of Queen's phrases that she often uses is "do not get complacent." And that's what I found has been happening. After we saw the march on the June 6th of 2020, over 8,000 people crowded into downtown Guelph, and so many more tuned in online. Then the next year, you know, when we're commemorating the anniversary of that march, it was just in the tens, or, you know, 30 or 20 people that come out. And so the loss of consciousness of the people in our community, it truly saddened me. So we need to continue these conversations. We need to continue the dialogue, because for us, it wasn't just a static moment in time. It seems to be like almost every decade there's something. When you look in the States from Martin Luther King in the 60s, you look at the Black Power movement, the Black Panthers in this, you know, the 70s, Angela Davis and those sort of figures. I look at the late 80s and in the 90s when we had the emergence of the hip hop culture. There's always something that comes about that amplifies our Black community, but it seems to be a static moment. And these things, it's not a wave that's continuing. So these, we're Black, as I always say, 365 days of the year, not just in February or not just on August 1st. So these issues continue to affect us. And so we need to continue the dialogue of not just the Black community, but our greater BIPOC community. And in terms of, you know, funding and where we really would like to see ourselves, it's I think our next really big wave to continue this education is cultural tourism. And so if the city of Guelph has any funding initiatives in that aspect, that's really an area that we would love to explore in terms of education, bringing people into our community in Guelph, Wellington, and beyond to learn more about the trials and not just the struggles, but the positive aspects, because there is lots of joy in our lives. When we look at this weekend, for example, even though we're celebrating the emancipation of enslaved people, we're also celebrating. So there's joy and there's happiness along with the sadness. So that's what needs to be kept in mind when we talk about our community.
Didn't you guys receive an award recently?
Well, a couple of awards. In returns of our, as Queen had mentioned, we have just completed our Freedom Project. It seemed like almost a decade-long project, but in reality, it was only 2 years of ongoing construction during the pandemic. It allowed for universal accessibility into the Heritage Hall. We have a new addition at the back that has a wheelchair ramp, an accessible bathroom, and a vestibule. So we won two awards, one from the Architectural Conservancy of Ontario for the renovation to a heritage building. And the second award that I won was for the from the Lieutenant Governor's Award from the Ontario Heritage Trust in terms of community leadership for a heritage organization. So if you do come to a tour of the Heritage Hall, you can see both of those plaques and certificates on display.
Does the Guelph Black Heritage Society wrestle with challenges like the compartmentalization of Black heritage into food, dance, fashion, and other soft elements of culture, rather than addressing the issues of class wealth and opportunity? And with regards to music, for example, we just had Hillside, and for the most part, it's a white event. How do we change that dominant culture character?
So I guess the first part of that question, I can start here, Denise, if you're okay with that. Mm-hmm. Like the first part of that question, I would say, I feel like the Guelph Black heritage actually has a good balance in the space of like joy and then trying to also educate. So whether that be, for example, Emancipation Day, while we do have moments while we're freeing the ancestors and we're educating and having some moments of prayer and solemn, we also have Caribbean dance and African dance that kind of uplift the community and have this kind of celebratory moment. So I feel like we really try to make sure that there's bits of that. And I will say that I think we try also in selfishly for ourselves, because there's nothing worse than leaving an event feeling just terrible about the things that have happened to your community. That echoed in the protest that ran at the very end of the protest. There was just music and dance at the end, because the last thing you want to leave is in a more sad, depressed state than when you came. And so I think Guelph Black Heritage really tries to find that balance, and it is a very hard balance to find when we're in such a socio-economical state of like literally the whole world burning and these constant things happening around us, whether that be, you know, the crisis we're seeing in the States from mass shootings to shootings on Black bodies from police officers to just recently we saw one of the biggest African artists, her name is Yumi, denied access to Quebec for an Afrofest that was happening there because they thought she was trying to get access into Canada. And she is like, these things are happening outside. So it can be really hard to find that balance of where is the joy and celebration. I'm also now forgetting the second part of that question.
Is it about like events like at Hillside and stuff that were not Black run?
Or like there wasn't much Black representation?
I guess, you know, so when we look at the pandemic, and I'm gonna try to say this in like the least like political way, when we look at the pandemic and we look at the conversation around vaccines, there is a huge discrepancy on how vaccination conversations happen in Caribbean and African communities. This is because, again, we could have another 3-hour conversation on the history of vaccination testing and all these different things. That was a part indicator to some folks not having access, you know, to Hillside because of some of the rules and regulations. The other thing is that we just haven't spread that education far enough. And I think when we look at EDI and we look at anti-racism, it takes precise work. That means as, let's say Hillside, let's say multicultural, whoever it is, if you're missing that chunk, reach out to those artists. Don't let those artists reach out to you. We know the incredible artists that are out there. They can reach out and say, are you available? You should look into this festival. Taking that initiative, because sometimes we don't know about the festival. Sometimes that's not where we're integrated, or we're part of all the other festivals like Jerk Fest, Afro Fest, Reggae Fest, the Afro-Caribbean markets that happen, like all the wonderful other events surrounding our community. So sometimes I find that piece might help Hillside in the future is, okay, we're missing this in our piece, how about we take that initiative and look for those artists and maybe reach out to them and invite them out, invite them to the space, allow the safe space to be opened to them instead of them hunting for the safe spaces that we don't always know are there for us. So it can be a little convoluted with some of like our history, some of our heritage in terms of Caribbean and African culture, but then also, do we feel welcome yet in that space or safe yet in that space? So I think that that's also a piece. Denise?
I'm just going to sort of switch topics for a little bit. I see a comment in the chat about Nikki Dredd. So Nick Taylor was a great friend of ours at the GBHS. He hosted events for us, and everybody knows about his love of reggae music and his love for Caribbean culture, proud native of Guyana. So Corinne and Nikki's family, they have donated to us some of his books, his magazines, and also too, one of our projects that we're working on is digitizing some of the recordings from his radio show from CFRU. So we've hired Shane Phillips, who's a local musician some of you may know. And one of the projects Shane is working on for us this summer is that he has some of these tapes. Some of them are still on reel-to-reel and actual cassette tapes. And he's digitizing them for us. And on our new digital archive, we will actually be uploading these recordings so that it can be shared throughout the community, because the impact that Nikki had in sharing reggae music with us within Guelph and Wellington, you can't even imagine that. And the fact that he just loved his Caribbean culture so much, those are things that we have to continue to share. So when we talk about our community, we're not just talking about in the 1800s, the wave of the Caribbean immigrants starting in the 50s and the 60s is also an important part of our story in Guelph and Wellington County too.
How do we get beyond African history only being taught in February?
I can't even. So my actual job is I've worked at a school board for 20 plus years. And at least at the school board that I work at, myself and a couple of other teachers, we've really been advocates. And within what's happened in the last couple of years with the reemergence of the social justice movement, the Ministry of Education has made some initiatives that we have to talk about anti-Black racism and those sort of things. And that's when they also increase the awareness about the Indigenous communities as well too. So we, in terms of making sure that these things are taught throughout the year, we have to start at the top. We have to have the mandates, unfortunately, from the Ministry of Ed, so that it comes down from the ministry to the directors, and then the directors really do have an influence on what is taught in the individual schools. So that's what they need to do. And the other thing that we need to focus on that irks me so much when I go around to do my school visits is that there's so much focus on Americans. In Canada, we have such a rich history. And when you think about it, there's the African history, Caribbean, and also there's Black people, South America, all over the world. And these histories really need to be taught and explored.
That's such a good point, Denise. Mm-hmm. They definitely need to be explored. I think, also one of the things that my company is doing right now is we're shifting conversations around equity, diversity, and inclusion. And we're opening up new workshops and trainings around violence, oppression, and harm. So really trying to have the deeper conversations and, might I add, pretty heavy conversations, whether you're BIPOC or ally, in that space. Violence alone, we could probably talk about all year long. It is one of the largest global phenomenons that we face. And indicative to that, what we've realized too is, as we said, not many calls to action have been changed. So it takes really the folks who are on this call are such move makers. It takes you kind of pushing at those higher levels to initiate these changes within our schools. Within our systems. My new initiative next year is going to try and tell these stories through art. There really seems to be, storytelling and political change that can happen through art. Art has always been a way to transform these conversations. So whether that be through storytelling of dance, or whether that be through creating those opportunities like we did at Multicultural Festival to kind of get other folks to join in Caribbean heritage and culture, trying to appreciate it but not appropriate it, because you are always welcome in the space, you are guests in that space though. So just encouraging that as well, I think, as we really have to start having those deeper conversations about the violence, oppression, and harm that is happening in our communities. And it's not just what we see in America, it's happening right here in Guelph. I've had too many conversations over these last few months with youth, there was a woman who was, when the bank robbery happened at Scotiabank, that the police tried to accuse her. She was a Black woman that was just a bystander standing in the bank. Like, literally, these are situations I'm hearing of all the time in our city. Even the bill for Laura May Lindo right now is having so much pushback on things that we should be reflecting on and learning about. So take some time for those things. Those are the things people need momentum on. I know it's hard with our small but mighty Green Party team. I love Mike, but it can be hard. So he needs that extra support too, as counselors, as community members, as leaders in this city. Those are those spaces that you can also encourage that and open it up so these things can happen.
Maybe as a former teacher, Phil, you'd like to make a comment?
Thanks, Tanya. And Queen and Denise, thank you very much. This has been fabulous. I have a twofold comment. The great frustration that I found with Black History Month was trying to teach Black history in the shortest month of the year. I cannot teach Africville to the Kelsos, to every experience out in Alberta that Black Canadians experience. It's massive. And it was a problem both for my Black students and for my non-Black students as well, because we just compartmentalized a lot of history virtually into non-existence. And I think that's incredibly important. But the other problem with this is the actual blowback that we get from the community. And this was a significant issue in so many ways. And I'm glad that you brought this up, Tanya, because I'm going to encourage everybody to remember the school board trustee elections. Not this board, but a board very close to ours is currently grappling with issues of QAnon and, essentially white supremacists seeking to have positions on the school boards because they're influential and people forget about these elections. And so very few people vote. And this will become a significant challenge in terms of curriculum. And I'm sure Denise can appreciate locally developed curriculum as well. There is a real need for us to recognize that when it comes to issues of equity, whether it's racial, gender, religious equity, tolerance and acceptance, politics matters. And the school system matters a lot. Unless we get the right people who are prepared to take these issues forward and to essentially employ the right superintendents and employ the right directors, this is going to be an issue that will stop before it gets started.
But it scares me that the world that we're in is moving backwards, and it kills me to think that no matter how hard Denise and I work, no matter how much we work, like literally day in and day out, it doesn't change the fact that someone might get killed tomorrow. And we can't protect that or stop that without other people standing up for this justice and for the rights that are happening here. There has to be accountability. There was over 10 murders of Black bodies by the Peel police in the last 2 years, and none were held accountable for. Zero.
Denise, Queen, thank you so much for our education today. Thank you for being open to our questions as we are unlearning and relearning. And is there anything that you would like to say in closing before Tanya does our announcements?
I would just like to say thank you again for inviting us. We really do appreciate the opportunity to connect with our community. And I think it's important that we communicate and keep on having these dialogues. And as always, we'd love to see you out on Monday to support our Emancipation Day celebration. And not just on Monday or in February, but throughout the year, please remember to support the GBHS. Thank you.
Yes, thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in or co-joining today. Thank you for taking time to just listen and ask such engaging questions. Morgan, that was a wonderful job as moderator. Thank you for spreading that. And Tanya, for the work that you both did today, that is just really appreciative. These conversations are not easy. I apologize for breaking down, but that like pinpoint sits in me literally every second of every day, of every minute, of every hour, of every time of the year. That weight sits on our community. And so if you can take some time to educate yourself, grow through that, to take some of that weight off and help support that, that means the world to us in allyship and as accomplices in the space. And make sure to just check out the Guelph Black Heritage Society, our Facebook, our Instagram, our website. You can always donate or you can always continue to volunteer, come out to our wonderful events. And it's just been a great opportunity. Thank you for having us.
Breezy Breakfast is the weekly news and information show. The coffee is always warm and energizing, and the guests always increase our appetites for more food for thought. Thanks to the Breezy team of Kevin Bowman, Morgan Danley, Tanya Gavard, and Phil Out. Music provided by Jules Stern. I'm Jiayu Yan, the producer of the Breezy Breakfast podcast. We are taking August off. See you in September.